May God be with you. Thank you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Glory to you, O Lord. Jesus and his disciples set out for the villages of Caesarea Philippi. Along the way, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" They said in reply, "John the Baptist." Others, Elijah. Still others, one of the prophets. And he asked them, "But who do you say that I am?" Peter said to him in reply, "You are the Christ." Then he warned them not to tell anyone about him. He began to teach them that the Son of Humanity must suffer greatly, be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and rise after 3 days. He spoke this openly. Then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. At this, he turned around and, looking at his disciples, rebuked Peter and said, "Get thee behind me, Satan. You are thinking not as God does, but as human beings do." He summoned the crowd with his disciples and said to them, "If you wish to come after me, you must deny yourself and take up your cross and follow me. But whoever wishes to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for my sake and that of the gospel will save it." The gospel of the Lord. This week, I attended the funeral of a good friend of mine's, Minister Lorenz E. Evans, and I was asked to reflect on his legacy. And as I thought about that, I thought his legacy was helping Black people embrace their truest and most authentic identity. In the 70s and 80s, Minister Evans refused to stand for the inferior education of Black adults and children. And he was disturbed by the enormous levels of low self-esteem. So he started the Charles Riley Tutorial Center to not only address literacy, but the problem of Black identity. And through his institute and his tutorial center, he taught Black children and those who he served that Black identity went way beyond American slavery. He took the students back, reminding them that they were descendants of African kings and queens and princes and princesses. He taught them all about the amazing Black ancestors on whose shoulders they were standing. He reminded Black people and children in his care that they were people who had greatness inside of them as a way to battle the disease of low self-esteem and self-doubt that ravages the Black community as a result of racism. His work created an educational formula that expanded the capacity, the intellect, self-assurance, confidence, high self-esteem, and a call to service from Black children from all over the city. At his funeral, the pastor asked for all the people who had been students of his and had been touched, had their lives touched by his teachings, to stand up. As I looked around and people began to pop up from everywhere, there were Black council members that stood up, lawyers, doctors, community organizers, teachers, bankers, politicians, and community leaders. Understanding their identity led them to a life of service to others. Father Bob Wirth, when he addressed the crowd in the audience, he said, "Minister Evans has found a formula that works. We should all go back," he said, "and figure out how we might integrate this formula into our work, into our schools, and into our communities." He understood that our sense of identity was important on how we engage the world. And so in the gospel today, Jesus poses a question about his own identity to his disciples. He asks them, "Who do people say that I am?" Thinking about his own identity. Have you ever posed that question to yourself and wondered, "Who am I? Who am I really?" For many of us, identity is shaped for us when we are children, by our parents or family members or our community. Just as Mary and Joseph, I am sure, reminded Jesus every day of the greatness that lied within him, the love that they had for him, the love that God had for him, the call that was on his life, the responsibility that he had in carrying out God's mission of unconditional love and justice in the world. Jesus had a great start and wonderful parents. And yet it is also the reality that there are many children who don't get that kind of a start. They don't get what they need to shore up their identity. They may suffer abuse or trauma. And in those cases, it is God's love and the love we give them that we must rely on for healing and identity. It makes me think of the time that I was working with my daughter, trying to instill a good sound identity into my grandson, Jordan. And so we agreed that I would help her raise him to shape that identity. And so when he was 2 months old, I read him the autobiography of Malcolm X. I reminded him every day of how smart and kind and brilliant and helpful he was. I told him that he had his First Amendment rights to freedom of speech because this is America. So don't you ever lose your voice. We had discussions about the importance of gender equality, that girls were just as capable as boys. We played together and we often discussed current issues. Did I go overboard? Yes, I did. Like a good grandmother. So when he was 4, he was home with his mother. And so she was trying to get him to pick up his room and to pick up his toys. And so he began to debate with her about that. And so she said to him, "Jordan, stop arguing with me. Just be quiet and go do what I told you and pick up those toys." And he turned to her with his 4-year-old self and he said, "I don't have to be quiet. This is America. I have my free speech." He was dangerously growing into his identity. My daughter said, "I thought to myself, who are you and what have you done with my son?" Several years ago, I attended a women's ordination conference. And as an icebreaker, they told us to pick a partner at the table and to answer this question: who are you in this work of women's liberation and racial justice? Who are you? And of course, we all began kind of at a surface level. And I began that way, you know, I'm a mother and a nurse and a minister, a daughter, a sister, an activist, a Christian. And the more we began to reflect, the deeper we were able to go with each other. Until I got to things like, I'm the daughter of immigrants, committed to the legacy of my African ancestors, someone who believes in justice, fair play, equality, compassion, nonviolence, peace, cooperation, and ending racism and discrimination. Hearing what was deep inside of us helped us to better prepare to serve the world in the ways that we were articulating it. And so perhaps Jesus wanted his disciples to reflect on his identity so that they could also reflect on their own. And so they run a list to him. They said, "Well, some say you're kind of remind them of John the Baptist. He's a little wild, you know, he's faithful to God, unpredictable in his thinking. He thinks outside the box." And other people say that perhaps you remind them of Elijah, the prophet and the messenger of God. And still others say that you may be one of the other prophets. And then Jesus says, okay. But then he brings the question closer to home. And he says to them, but who do you say that I am? Who do you say that I am? Do you get who I am? Is my identity clear among you? Interesting question. Sometimes, depending on what's happening in our lives, it can be very easy to lose sight of who Jesus is and who he's calling us to be. But Peter has this shining moment in the text, and he nails it. He says, you are the Christ. I know exactly who you are. And then Jesus does something strange, and he says, now don't tell anybody about me. And then he begins to teach them about his suffering that he will endure because of that identity as the Christ. So why the shift and the shutting down of that conversation? Perhaps Jesus was satisfied that if they understood him as the Christ who is a different kind of king, the anointed one, chosen by God to serve the least, the lost, the left out, the marginalized, that he could be assured that they would follow the example he was leaving them and that the world would be in good hands. No wonder he transitions to how he would suffer rejection, betrayal, and even death. But he knows that he's getting ready to leave them. But he reminds them that that is not the end of the story. Resurrection is new life and a resurgence of life. New life that will live on in each of them as it lives on in each of us. Because it is important that we know who Jesus is and that they know who he is to be able to attend to the pain and the hurt of the world as Jesus did. And so these disciples reveal a truth to us today. If Jesus is the Christ, then we are the followers of Christ. That we don't follow ourselves, our own politics, or even our own favorite cause. We follow Jesus, the one who loves unconditionally, the one who refrains from judgment, the compassionate one, the one who brings healing to those who are sick, who speaks truth to power, who lifts up those around him and sets them free, the one who believes in us more than we believe in ourselves sometimes. And Jesus' identity is our own. And he knows that he has spent 3 years modeling this way of life for the disciples. And he wants to make sure that they get it, that we get it. This week in the news, you may have read that the U.S. wants to give Mexico $20 million to deport people back to their countries who are trying to get to the U.S. through Mexico. And when I read that article, I thought to myself, this is not our American identity. Our identity is to welcome the stranger. And so if we have $20 million to spend, we should spend it helping immigrants, not hindering them. That's our identity. It's important to know who we are when life changes, because our mission and our identity does not change because of those circumstances. I learned that when I was 17 years old and I got my first job after school when I was in high school, working for the state as a food service worker. And because of the way that my school bus schedule was, it would always put me at the job 10 minutes after the shift started. And so when they interviewed me, I told them that would be the reality. And they said, no problem. You know, you're fine. We want you. And so they hired me. And I was so happy to serve the people. So happy. And 11 months into the job, I was called in and fired for repeated tardiness. I felt devastated, betrayed, helpless. And my self-esteem took a huge hit. Who was I? I thought, if I couldn't even manage to keep a job as a food service worker. And then I heard the spirit within say to me, Who were you before you became a food service worker? Who were you? My identity was not being a food service worker. My identity was to be a servant, to know that I was a child of God, to be faithful, to trust in God's love for me in everything that happens along the journey. That's our identity. And so I finished high school. I went on to nursing school to serve. I became a lay minister and continued to be able to serve. And today I'm a priest and a pastor, and I continue to be able to serve. My identity did not change. Taking the journey to find out who we are isn't always easy. It wasn't easy for Jesus either. In the face of violence against him, he chose peace and nonviolence because that's who he was. In the face of rejection and betrayal, he chose forgiveness and unconditional love. In the face of suffering, he chose healing and reconciliation. In the face of injustice, he chose justice and inclusion. We too will meet difficulty and opposition as we live out our identity. And we will need to choose what Jesus chose, because we're called to choose these things too. They are as much our identity as they are his. It reminds me of the story of the chicken and the eagle. There was a farmer who happened upon an eagle that was very small. He had fallen out of the safety of his nest. And he was a chicken farmer, so he picked up the eagle and he brought him back to the farm. And he raised him in the chicken coop among his many chickens. Well, the eagle grew up doing what chickens do, living like a chicken and believing that he was, in fact, a chicken. Until a naturalist came along one day to the farm to see if he had heard what he had heard about this chicken, this eagle acting like a chicken, was really true. So he knew that an eagle is king of the sky, and to his surprise, there the eagle was strutting around the chicken coop, pecking at the ground, acting very much like a chicken. So the farmer said to the naturalist, "This bird is no longer an eagle. He now believes he's a chicken because of how he has been raised." Well, the naturalist knew that there was much more to this great bird than his action showed. He believed that because he was born an eagle and that he had the heart of an eagle and that nothing could change that. And so he picked up the eagle and he lifted him up onto the fence surrounding the chicken coop. And he said, "Eagle, thou art an eagle. Stretch forth thy wings and fly." The eagle moved slightly, glanced down at the chicken coop where he was comfortable, jumped off that fence, and continued doing what chickens do. Well, the farmer was satisfied. He said, "I told you he was a chicken." The naturalist said, "Okay." So he took the eagle to the top of the farmhouse, and he spoke to him there, and he said, "Eagle, thou art an eagle. Thou dost belong to the sky and not the earth. Stretch forth thy wings and fly." The bird jumped from the man's arms onto the roof of the farmhouse and then right back down into the chicken coop. Knowing what the eagles were really all about, the naturalist asked the farmer, he said, "Would you just let me try one more time?" And so he took the eagle and the farmer some distance away to the foot of a high mountain. They could not see the farm from there, nor could they see the chicken coop from this new setting. The man took the eagle and he held him on his arm and he pointed high in the sky towards the sun and he said, "Eagle, thou art an eagle. Thou dost not belong. Thou dost belong to the sky and not the earth. Stretch forth thy wings and fly." And this time, the eagle stared skyway into the bright sun, straightened his large body, stretched his massive wings, and his wings moved slow at first, and then surely, and then powerfully. With the mighty screech of an eagle, he flew. Because it was in looking up that the eagle realized his true identity was to soar and not to pluck the ground like a chicken. Our true identity is to look up, to look to God, to look to Jesus, and to soar as well, to stretch our wings of faith through the darkness, the difficulty, and the light, to bring God's love to a hurting world that so desperately needs us. Because we are eagles, we're not chickens. That's who we are. And in us is the fullness of greatness, divinity, Christ's identity, and Christ's mission to bring healing to our world. The prophet Isaiah in the 40th chapter says it well. They that wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up on eagles. They shall mount up on wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint.